Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
We check in every Tuesday afternoon just after 4:05 down at City Hall, and the mayor of the great city of Bloomington is our great friend, Mayor John Hamilton. Mayor Hamilton, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you. I'm well, thank you. Enjoying this delightful afternoon, indeed.
I'm looking under the couch cushions for where the suntan lotion is from last year, and getting ready for a day in the 80s tomorrow. Well, that's pretty good. I don't think we can be too upset about any of that moving forward. And before we get moving forward, was last Saturday the first farmers market? How did everything go down there?
It was. I was down at City Hall parking lot for the opening day. April's usually a little slow. You know, there's not as many crops ready to sell, but the farmers were out and the customers were there, and we walked away with some ramps and some spinach and some various vegetables, and it was delightful, and I encourage everybody to come down.
Excellent.
From 8 to 1.
And I bet 8 o'clock was a little chilly. We were at baseball about 10:30, 10:40, and it just wasn't ready yet. But, boy, as the afternoon went on, it got really, really nice.
You know, I ended up late in the afternoon at Switchyard Park, and that place was hopping. Man, it was busy, and the playground was full, and the dog park was full, and it was nice to see.
Yeah, it's great, because that's exactly what it's for, naturally social and physical distancing there because of, 57 acres. There's room for everyone. We drove by, when did we go? We went downtown about 2:30, and we thought there was a concert, or we have never seen the parking lot so full at the park. It's great that people, and not to mention all the people that walk down there or bike down there. That's exactly why you built it.
Or skateboard down there. There are a lot of them, too. that's one of the most popular spectator areas, I think, is watching the range of people and skills. But anyways, from pickleball, basketball, down to skateboarding to the dog park, it was really fun to see people using that new park.
And you're right. Everybody hangs out at the concrete pool, for lack of a better word, because that's where the danger is at. That's where the drama will be. I'm not sure, and that's a compliment, because the kids part of it is well built. You don't have to worry about too much happening over there. So if you want a little action, you go down to that. And by the way, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the air, but my wife has ridden her bike in there before, so she is
get out of here.
Tempted. Oh. Well, she wanted to show
the
kids.
Video.
Well, we do have one. She wanted to show the kids how cool mom is, and she survived. So that's the good news. That's the good news happening.
I'm glad to hear
with that. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. We check in every Tuesday. And I am now, well, not yet, but in 2 weeks from today, I will join the ranks of the vaccinated. And I'm happy to report that even though I'm the biggest weenie about needles in the history of weenies, a very painless and very boring process. And I'd just like to thank our friends at Williams Brothers. That's where I went to get my shot this afternoon. I got a little nervous. I was like, you know, I'm going to do this before I go on the air around 1 o'clock. Am I going to have reactions or stuff? And I'm going to tell you, I had the Johnson & Johnson, one shot only, and my arm does not hurt. I do not feel any differently than I did yesterday. So that's where I'm at.
Well, I'm glad you did that, Mike. That's a public service in a way, and I really do appreciate you sharing that and your story. And, you know, it is through vaccinations that we are going to climb out of this pandemic, and more people getting the shots in the arms, and that protection is how we're going to get there. And we're still in a little bit of a dicey spot, you know, so thanks for doing that and sharing your story.
And it doesn't hurt. I was weak. And I looked the other way, and I wasn't, and it was done just like that. And she said, here's a Band-Aid, and go sit over there for 15 minutes. So the process took about 4 minutes. And then, as Tom Petty once mentioned, the waiting is the hardest part. Because you don't think. They said, well, there could be side effects. And you
right.
Just, oh, does my throat itch all of a sudden? Am I getting sweaty? I don't. Is it a false positive? No, just go do it. And I was telling the mayor off the air, folks, that I saw some folks over there today, and I won't say what time I went over there. That's not the point. That were a little bit older than I thought. That's great that they're getting the shot, but those are the people that really need to get the shot, correct? If you're kind of in your 70s or higher, I would have thought we'd have covered that by now. But if not, find an appointment and get that taken care of.
Absolutely. You know, the vaccines have been spectacularly successful at avoiding death or serious injury from those, serious disease from those who've been vaccinated. And that's critically important for our older folks, many of whom have gotten it, but as you said, by no means all. And we need to keep encouraging folks to get the vaccine. It's more available than ever, and it will continue to get more available. And, you know, we're going in the wrong direction in terms of cases and hospitalizations locally and in the state. So we need to keep focused on vaccines and masking and distancing still for a few more weeks for sure.
Now, the million-dollar question is, we've heard our friends in Michigan. Is it a different strain? Is it a different issue? What is the major concern that when you get together with your group of, what is that, six or seven folks each week, is that the main concern right now, that they're a neighboring state?
Yeah, I really think it is. And again, I'm not an epidemiologist and I don't even play one on the radio, but it is a race between the vaccine and how many people get it versus the variant and how much of that is spreading, because there are some much more infectious variants. Michigan and Florida have been particularly hit so far. The fact that we are right next to Michigan is not ideal. And just to put it in context, if you look at the Michigan COVID dashboard, they went from 1,000 cases a day 6 weeks ago or so to 6,000 cases a day today, and their hospitalizations have gone up. And that's an example of what can happen if the variant really gets a hold and spreads. So we don't want that kind of surge. Indiana has gone up about 25% in the last month or so in terms of daily case rate. So it's nothing like Michigan, but we don't want it to be the start of that curve. We want it to slow down. So, you know, it really is a serious. You know, you look at Europe, what's happened. We want to be on the good side of that story, not the bad side of that story.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. And we saw last Friday a press release coming out from the group, which includes yourself, Penny Caudill, Brian Shockney, Thomas Sharp, the Monroe County Health Officer, the Monroe County Board of Commissioners, and Lauren Robel, the Provost at Indiana University. And basically, the four or five paragraphs said, the numbers aren't going in the right direction. They're not ridiculous. They're just not going in the right direction. Where do you see, or where is the general feeling from your group that where is this coming from? Because we all think, well, we've been doing a good job and we've been doing this and doing that. Are we missing something that we should be doing? Or is this just the virus kind of snaking through and getting through all the nooks and crannies?
Yeah, I think it's a judgment that there is variants that are more infectious that are showing up. People are traveling more. There's a little more interactions happening. And it doesn't take a lot to see this happening. IU's mitigation testing has still got good numbers, but they went from 0.2% to 0.4%. Well, that's the wrong direction. So it's a combination of things, and it really is. It's this race. It's like we just need more vaccinations in combination with lowering the interactions. Because if you had a plane load go from Florida to Michigan with that UK variant, you know, you can really cause a difference in a state over a matter of a few weeks.
Yeah, and as you brought up, people spring breaking, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. Again, just be safe, be smart, and get vaccinated, wear your mask, and do all that. So the end of well, there is no end just yet, but what would be some of the key angles that would it be as far as neighboring states for us to relax, or Am I just daydreaming here?
Well, look, I think the goal we all want to see, for example, is that in the fall, all of our schools will be able to open more or less in a regular manner, and the university and other places. And the fall is, what is that now, 3 or 4 months away, right? So we just need to make sure we don't have a huge backslide like Europe, where they've had to really shut down economies again and communities and countries. And we the vaccinations are going fast, which is great, but we're still not out of the woods. So the next weeks, the next month or two are going to be really important so that we can continue the progress of opening up more. And I'm hopeful and confident that we will get there, but I'm still nervous. And as the director of the Center for Disease Control, Walensky, said, you got to be humble dealing with this virus. You just got to be humble. And we've been wrong before, so let's be careful.
It's sometimes hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube, and we've done such a good job to get to this point. Indiana University has been a major partner in this. Simon Scott Assembly Hall, they are opening their doors, or they started last Monday. And have you had any feedback on how everything's been going over there?
I think it's gone great. I've heard, they basically are picking up from the convention center site, and so they're getting that allocation of vaccines. The new thing this week is the state undertook a program to send special vaccine doses, special numbers of doses, to try to get a whole bunch of university community people, students, faculty, staff, vaccinated before the end of the school year. So whereas last week they had maybe 800 doses going out, this week I think they're aiming to do about 7,000 doses. So that's a huge increase, focused on the vaccine delivery for the university community. And that's good for us. It hopefully makes room for more of us to get appointments. So keep checking for options and get yourself a shot in the arm.
Now, the question that jumps off the page that I have to ask is, even though finals will happen and summertime will hit, is that vaccination site going to keep running?
We expect they will keep running, probably. Good. as a county site. And I think if you know, the goal is to get more and more vaccine sites, more pharmacies, more companies doing their own, more doctors that can do this. So the goal, I think I saw at the federal level, is, you know, really increasing the availability of vaccine sites month to month through the next months.
Yeah, and we know, I believe Eric Holcomb, Governor Holcomb, was in Gary today getting ready for their big opening on tomorrow. We know the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I don't know if they have any dates left. I thought I saw late last week that they were booked through the 24th. But I've talked to people that are going to go down to Paoli. I've talked to people that have gone to Greencastle and everything else. So if you want to find it, they're out there. And it might not be as convenient as we'd like yet, but it's our first pandemic together, and not everything works out perfectly. So we're happy to have options. And it sounds like Indiana is making the most of it. So I think we have to give our state leaders some credit as well.
Again, you know, we're so fortunate to have Indiana University here, and that's a great thing. I've always appreciated that the governor allows local jurisdictions to have different rules, tighter rules from the state. The state General Assembly is looking at taking that back, which would be a big mistake. I do think the governor, and I criticized him publicly, I think it's too early to take the mask mandate off, but he's made that decision to turn it voluntary, but we are keeping it locally. It is still a requirement in Monroe County to wear a mask when you're indoors, basically, or a place you're going to be within 6 feet of people. So we think that's helpful. We think it's important, and that's what the group of us last Friday was reiterated. We're kind of holding arms together and saying, this is working for us. We need to keep it going.
And and I'm glad that's the case, but I read today in the Indianapolis Star, here's some major retailers, what they're choosing to do. Walmart will keep its blanket requirement that every shopper in its stores have a face covering. That's the entire state. This is not just Monroe County, obviously. Sam's Club is the same. Target, Aldi, Kroger, Lowe's, Menards, CVS. I mean,
yeah, right.
I can just keep going. Yeah. These are all national chains that say we're sticking with you must wear a mask to come in. So that's interesting, because I've always enjoyed having you on this program for the last year, because we try to separate us from them. We're all in it together, but we're not all in the same codes or colors on the blues, orange, and whatever else. So we try to tell what's going on here, and we haven't changed anything here, correct? We were just
That's
like
right.
we were last week and last month.
That's correct. We are basically the same with masking and social gathering limits and others. They may evolve a little, but it's a signal, and it's interesting that those very large retailers, they don't want to have different rules in their different hundreds of stores and trying to train all their people on that. And I think they find that their customers generally feel more comfortable if they know everybody's masked when they go in there for a little while longer. This isn't a permanent sentence, but it is an appropriate, prudent thing to do for a few more weeks.
And so obviously we know Bloomington is a tourist destination, so you'll see some people that might come from counties where it's not required. So the only of 92 counties, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 have decided to formally extend it. And that means 80, well, it means a bunch of them are not formally extending the mask mandate at this time. So Monroe is in that inclusion. Elkhart, Jackson, LaPorte, Marion, Monroe, Rush, St. Joe, Stark, Switzerland, and Wayne, if you're scoring at home, which you shouldn't be, but you should. So, I mean, we can see who is and who isn't. I get it, and we always have to talk about it. Mayor Hamilton is always generous with his time every Tuesday after 4:05. And now that we're wrangling with COVID, the rodeo is not over yet. The Planning Commission, it has finally, well, it's headed to the City Council. Tell me what we decided last night and where we're going down the road.
Yeah, you know, this. If you know a member on the Plan Commission, you should send them a care package and thank them. They worked really hard over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and these are volunteer residents, your neighbors and friends, that worked to approve the update to the Unified Development Ordinance and a new map, and they had voted over the weeks to do the adjustments, including the new student zone, student housing zone, including some introduction of missing middle duplexes, for example, in some areas. And in last night, they voted on the map itself, which if for every square inch of the city, it puts it into a zoning code. And there were a couple new zoning codes and others. Now, all that's their recommendation, and that all goes to City Council to do it over again. And they will start in the week or two ahead and hopefully get done in the weeks after that to put that into place. So it'll go in front of your 9 City Council members over the next few weeks.
Your elected officials. Those are, they signed up for this job, and that's part of it. And no one said this would be easy. But the next step when the City Council has it, you said about, we start all over. What starts all over so people are aware?
Yeah, the Plan Commission formally made recommendations to the council to approve 10 different amendments to the zoning code, which are basically word amendments. They're chapters. They include things like there's a new zoning area called multifamily students that's meant for larger student focused on undergraduate complexes. That we eliminated over 100 planned unit developments, which are historical special zoning areas, and tried to unify those. And they put the map in that tells which property is in which zone. Now there's a grandfathering kind of approach. If you're zoned currently in a way that matches, it doesn't matter if you get changed, you don't become, nobody shows up and knocks on your door and said, hey, you got to take down a wing or add this or that or anything. Everybody's grandfathered in. But for new things, it can affect that. And the City Council has to vote on all of those step by step before they become law.
Now, when this goes through this process, and I know we'll talk about it down the road as well, just to give people a general idea, can things be added or subtracted, or is it the whole document as one? How does that process? Just a thumbnail sketch, because we'll get to this down the road.
Real quickly, the map is an up or down vote from the council, I believe. They accept it or they reject it. If they reject it, it goes back to the Plan Commission, I believe. The amendments, the textual changes, they can amend them if they do change something, it goes back to the Plan Commission for their up or down. But ultimately, the City Council, as appropriate with the elected officials, has the final say on this. It's all set by state law, and I don't pretend to know every twist and turn in it, but we hope it'll be done in the next couple months, probably.
Excellent. And obviously, we'll keep following that story because that will be big news here locally. Mayor John Hamm, how's your back doing? You'd be pushing out a fire truck yet last Thursday. Is your back okay? A little sore?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of good help with that, but that was really an important milestone. We put in a new ladder truck on the west side out there on 3rd Street and one of our five fire stations. And it's frankly the four-year project to upgrade what had been really problematic equipment quality. And this is a 100-foot ladder. It's the biggest equipment. It cost over $1 million. It's a fantastic asset to be shared by the community. You can go check it out if you want, drop by and see it. And there's a tradition in the fire department, now 120 years old, and all across the country. You know who used to pull fire engines were horses, right?
Sure.
Before they were motorized. Well, horses couldn't back it into the fire station, so humans backed them into the fire stations, and now that's a tradition when you get a new piece of equipment. Humans push it into the fire station for the first time. So we did that. We did
no
get a little
idea.
Engine assist.
I had no idea the why behind that. That's absolutely now it's 100 foot. Does half of it stick out of the garage? How does that work?
The ladder's 100 foot.
Oh,
the truck's not 100 foot.
Well, that's good. I was going to say that's a heck of a truck there. But to your point, it replaced a 20-year-old truck, and you can only put so much duct tape and paper clips. And again, we're talking about public safety. You've had this vision and philosophy since you've been in office. We talk about water mains. We're talking about at some point these have to be addressed, and they just can't be kicked the can down the road.
You know, I think I can't remember if I've told you, but early when I took a ride on a fire truck and I did a 24-hour shift, twice on the way to a fire, this truck engine cut out.
Oh no.
Now, you can't have a fire truck whose engine isn't getting you there, and it could restart. But you know, we had equipment that was held together by duct tape and baling wire, and we don't now. We're on a cycle to you keep something in. The goal is to keep a new engine online for 7 years, use it back up for another 7 years, and then sell it. And that cycle is a smart and good one overall. It keeps us with good, safe equipment. It lets us have the backups if we need them. And all of this is integrated with the fire stations around us, fire departments around us, too.
Excellent. And public safety is part of governmental jobs. We've learned that over the years, and that's a big one. As you mentioned, you don't want things breaking down when human lives are at stake. Now, the American Rescue Plan, we've kind of, I don't want to say glossed over it on this program, but we're still not sure when the funds will arrive. Where are we in the process of allocating those funds? And, we have to be ready when they get here.
Yeah, I had a column about that this week. There's about $50 million coming to our community, most to the county and then a amount to the city as well, 60-40 kind of split. And we don't know when it will come. We expect it in the short months ahead, probably weeks. I don't think it'll be a few weeks, but it's meant to help us rescue what's going on, both looking at people and what they're going through and the economy. It's a huge transformational opportunity. All of those funds will be appropriated by the fiscal elected bodies, the county council and the city council. So my job as mayor is to propose how it should be invested and go to city council, and it'll be up to them to approve or adjust and appropriate that. But it's really a big chance for us to help climb out of this recession and move forward in the right direction.
And that's a big chunk of change when it finally arrives. But again, elected officials will make the final say on that. That's just how government works. And we like to give people a civics lesson every Tuesday for sure. You've got I want to make sure I get this right here. We had talked about the land next to the Switchyard Park. Now the affordable housing, it's going to go up. That project is going to begin in June.
I'm very excited. I can now stop talking about the property formerly known as Night Moves, which was always a little embarrassing, though when we bought it, we knew it was a prudent thing, we thought. And we do have what's called the Retreat at the Switchyard, which is right there at the east entrance to Switchyard Park, south of that entrance on Walnut. There's a planned project, and basically the city has donated that land. We sought a partner, and we had 10 people apply, and we picked one, and they're going to be building mostly affordable housing for people, about 64 units, and about a fourth of it will be market rate, and three-fourths of it will be focused on people making below 80% of our median income, also some Stone Belt clients, people with disabilities, housing vouchers and others. And one of the things, I mean, it's too much detail, I know, but one of the strategies is when we put that big investment in that park, we expect in the years ahead that there will be private market investment around it. We've seen that in all of our public investments like that. But what we want to do is strategically make sure we're protecting some affordable housing around there, because the market won't build that. So this is an example. Like, we have 8 units on the west end, this western entrance to the park. This is 48 units of affordable on the east side. We're actually now in front of the city council to get another 100 units put up right west of the basketball courts. And some of those, about 15% of those, will be affordable. So what we hope is in the years ahead, more and more people will live on Switchyard Park. And this is a really good down payment to make sure it's open to people from all walks of life.
Yeah, the affordability requirements I'm reading here are in place for at least 99 years.
Yep. We've worked really hard to make sure if we make something affordable, we keep it for a long time. And after 99 years, then whoever's hanging around here, they can figure out what comes next. But I mean, that's a good approach.
I think so as well. So that ground breaks in June. So that means you have to find your silver shovel somewhere. That's probably next to the big ribbon cutting shears. You're going to be down popping a new garage here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I got to have my hard hats and my shovels and all that ready. It's been busy. We will be opening up the trades garage, that's right, in about a couple weeks. And that's going to be exciting, and we're hoping for more news to roll out, which I'll share with you when I can about what's going on there. But the garages, you know, it's not been a bad year to build garages, because there hadn't been as much need for garages, but we're starting to see that pick up again.
Excellent. And again, exciting. You're either growing, moving in the right direction, or wondering why you're not. And I don't think we were having too much of a problem with that here. All the things we've just talked about with planning commissions and adding and adding and adding. So exciting times here in Bloomington, my friend. Get out and enjoy the sunshine. Go home early. Wait. You can go home early anytime you want. Get out there. Go have some fun. And come back next Tuesday, I beg you.
Thank you, Mike. Have a good week. I appreciate it.